Good morning, everyone. It's great to be here back again. I'm especially happy today because this time, for the first time since we left in 2022, my whole family is joining me. So it's a really special moment. Yesterday was a quite pretty intense day, especially because we have some migration issues yesterday. Thanks God we are here. But what I wanted to say is that the first moment that I entered to this place, I sensed the peace of God among us, and that comforted my heart. So also comfort my heart to see you. I also see new faces, which is good. Always met new people and friends, brothers and sisters. So the topic that I want to share, as it is in the bulletin, is the church as a community of dialogue. And I think that we are in a really difficult time when we desperately need to recuperate this virtue, this skill, this gift of dialogue. Well, one of my favorite novels is Crime and Punishment by Fyodor Dostoevsky. This is a powerful story about guilt, justice, and redemption. By the end of the novel, the main character, Raskolnikov, ironically begins to find redemption, not in freedom, but while serving a sentence in Siberian prison for a murder he committed. During his time in prison, Raskolnikov falls gravely ill and, while suffering from a high fever, has a haunting vision. A devastating epidemic begins in Asia and sweeps across Europe, wiping out nearly all of humanity, except for a few chosen survivors. But the real horror of this plague was not physical. It's a virus of the mind and of the heart. In his dream, people begin to lose their reason. They grow increasingly confident in their own opinions, convinced they alone possess the truth. As Dostoevsky puts it, and I quote, "Never have people considered themselves so intelligent, so certain of truth. And yet, the result is widespread confusion, isolation, and breakdown. People can no longer understand one another." When I first read this passage, it actually was two or three years ago, first time that I came back visiting and I got COVID. So I was in the Hof family house and I was really ill. Maybe probably not like Raskolnikov, but I was reading this, finished reading this novel. When I first read this passage, and especially when I was suffering of COVID, I was in shock because this felt disturbingly familiar to me. It's as if Dostoevsky foresaw our age, a time marked by deep division, distrust, and mutual misunderstanding. Today we live in the world of trolls, haters, and so-called echo chambers, where we hear no more than our own voice. In a society increasingly oriented toward digital communication, social networks, the culture of likes has emerged. In this culture, people tend to listen only to themselves and to those who are or think like them. The likes culture connects us and at the same time isolates us. It creates close and homogeneous tribes, but does not create real communities. Rather, it is destroying communities. Today, I want to share with you some ideas on how the church needs to counter this culture of hate by recovering its calling to be a community of dialogue. Based on Pentecost as the event marking the beginning of the church, I want to argue that the church from the beginning was called to be precisely a community of dialogue. So it's part of our DNA. This means that the first task of the church is to listen to one another. And the second task is to learn to speak the language of the other. And I will try to explain later what I mean by that. So my first point, a community of dialogue is, first of all, a community of listening. In his book, The Expulsion of the Other, Korean philosopher Byung-Chul Han predicts that sometime in the future, there may be a profession known as listener. For a fee, the listener gives an ear to the other. People will go to listener because there is hardly anyone else left who will listen to the other. Given the contemporary scenario in which we are gradually listening less and less to the other, this prophecy or prediction seems more disturbing. Our world today has stopped listening, and as a result, it resembles more Babel than Pentecost. Babel, a world of confusion and polarization where nobody listens to one another anymore. However, as a church, it is good to remember how Pentecost precisely challenged the culture of Babel. As some commentators point out, Pentecost can be seen as a supersede of Babel, noticing that while the latter results in confusion through the multiplicity of languages, the former leads to unity. Pentecost leads to unity despite the multiplicity of language. Talking about Pentecost as superseding Babel, Cuban theologian Justo Gonzalez makes this perceptive observation. In order to have the multitude understand what the disciples of Jesus were saying, the Holy Spirit had two options. One was to make all understand the Aramaic the disciples spoke. The other was to make each understand in their own language. Significantly, the Spirit chooses the latter route. In other words, had there been an Aramaic-only movement in the first century Palestine, Pentecost was a resounding no to that movement. And it is still a resounding no to any movement within the church that seeks to make all Christians think alike, speak alike, and behave alike. Thus, in contrast to Babel, Pentecost marked not the imposition of an hegemonic language on everyone, but the miracle of listening to and understanding the language of the other. However, not everyone understood what was happening in Pentecost. Present was a group of people who did not perceive the language miracle, but rather interpreted it as a nonsense, as a sign that the disciples were drunk. Justo Gonzalez suggests that this negative reaction was probably because those people were Jews from Jerusalem who spoke the official language, and therefore they were not surprised to hear the disciples speak in their own tongues, because they expected to understand whatever he say, the very fact that they now understand, it was now a cause for wonder. If I expect my language to be spoken, how could I be surprised when I understand what is being said? Gonzalez calls this the disadvantage of the advantage. The Spirit is manifested with power, and those who would otherwise seem to be advantaged because they are at home are now at a disadvantage precisely because they cannot see the extraordinary events that are taking place. This quote of Justo González, or this interpretation of Justo González about the people who don't understand or miss the miracle, reminds me of an experience that I had the first time I preached in English here in a church in the U.S. In this church was another church. Before the service, I was interviewed by the pastor. And to my surprise, I found that this pastor spoke a little bit of Spanish. So I asked him how he learned Spanish. And he told me that he had lived in Nicaragua for a couple of years. So that's why he speaks a little bit of Spanish. So during my sermon, which was based in this same passage, Acts 2, and I did the same observation about Justo González called about the disadvantage of the advantage. After I finished my sermon, the pastor did something quite unique. He led the congregation with the final benediction. And guess what he did? Guess what happened? Surprisingly for everyone, including myself, he did the benediction in Spanish. What struck me the most was the reaction of a little kid, about 8 years old, who was in a row in front of us. The kid was really angry and started to complaining to his parents, saying, "Why is the pastor speaking in a language that we don't speak?" I thought to myself, this is exactly the reaction of the Jews from Jerusalem that didn't understand what was going on. These kids assumes that everyone should speak his language because he was at home. The same can also happen to us. We can sometimes miss what God is doing among us because we assume everyone should speak our language. And by doing so, we run the risk of stop listening. But listening, as Dietrich Bonhoeffer once reminded us, is the first service that the church can provide to the world. I'm going to repeat. According to Bonhoeffer, listening is the first service that the church can provide to the world. Just as our love for God begins with listening to God's word, the beginning of love for other human beings is learning to listen to them. But are we really listening? I'm afraid that the church has sometimes become part of the problem rather than part of the solution. Even in Bonhoeffer's time, he perceived and confronted the reality that the church may have stopped listening. In his book, Life Together, he wrote the following, and I quote, "Christians, especially ministers, so often think they must always contribute something when they are in the company of others, that this is the one service they have to render. They forget that listening can be a greater service than speaking. Many people are looking for an ear that will listen. They do not find it among Christians because these Christians are talking where they should be listening. But he who can no longer listen to his brother or sisters will soon be no longer listening to God either." These are hard words to hear. And I wonder what Bonhoeffer would say about the church in our world today. One thing we can learn from his book, Life Together, is that there is no community if there is no genuine interest in listening to the other. So the first step to be a community of dialogue is to be a community of listening. But this is not the only step. So that led me to my second point. A community of dialogue is also a community that learns to speak the other's language. Let me explain what I mean by that. The miracle of Pentecost is not only about listening, but also about speaking. Part of our mission as a church since Pentecost is to translate the gospel into other cultures, which includes learning how to speak and understand their own language. So the church needs to be a community that learns how to speak the other's language. And this is important because speaking another language, as some of you know, involves more than mere communication. More importantly, it is about belonging, intimacy, and being bound together. Theologian Willie James Jennings, in his commentary on the book of Acts, has a beautiful quote that explains this better. There comes a crucial moment, say Willie Jennings, in the learning of any language, if one wishes to reach fluency, that enunciation, requirements, and repetition must give way to sheer wanting. Some people learn a language out of gut-wrenching determination born of necessity. Like I try to learn German, but I fail. Some people learn a language, but most people, however, who enter a lifetime of fluency, do so because at some point in time, they're learning to love it. They fall in love with the sounds. The language sounds beautiful to them. And if that love is complete, they fall in love with its original signifiers. They come to love the people. They come to love the people. Speak a language, speak a people. God speaks people fluently. And God wants the disciple of his son to speak people fluently too. End of quote. One of the things that surprised me and my family, from the first moment about this church, LMC, is that we felt welcome from the very beginning. And this was not the first church we visit to congregate as a family. Before we came to LMC, we visited different kind of churches, including Hispanic churches. Different kind of churches. So what makes the difference? And I think the difference was that you, LMC, always showed interest, not only in our language. Many of you speak language, and by the way, thank you for the kind gesture to have this program of today, liturgy, in Spanish and also in English. That's just an example of how welcome you are from strangers from other languages. But not only because you show interest in our language, but you also show interest in our culture, in our country, our people, their struggles. Something you still do to this day by supporting our ministry in Guatemala. And for that, we are highly grateful. But today, as you know, we live in a really difficult moment where my people from Guatemala and El Salvador and other migrants from different places are having a hard time living in this country. Today, it seems that the fear of migrants drives society in general and politicians in particular. Yesterday, we have a little bit of a taste of how migrants also have fear, real fear. The environment is different. You can sense in the atmosphere. But the church knows better. And I know this church knows better. We know that in the Bible, the people of God have always been marked by showing hospitality to migrants and strangers. And this is so because from the Old Testament, we learned that the identity of God's people has always involved being a stranger. When a For instance, Leviticus 19 says, when a stranger resides with you in your land, you shall not do him wrong. The stranger who resides with you shall be to you as the citizen among you. You shall love the stranger as yourself, for you were strangers in the land of Egypt. And this condition of being a stranger is likewise integral to the church identity. In the New Testament, the church is called to be strangers and sojourners, 1 Peter 1. And above all, Jesus said, I was a stranger, and you invited me in, Matthew 25:35. Certainly, this church has been a hospitable church to migrants and strangers, and I encourage you to continue to reflect this Christian and biblical virtue, especially today during these difficult times. And this leads me to another point relating to speaking the other language. We not only need to speak with the other in their own language, but we also need to speak for them sometimes. And perhaps this is the most difficult part. The church, following Jesus' example, also has a prophetic role in which she needs to advocate for those who are suffering any sort of injustice and mistreatment. To quote the famous word of Archbishop Oscar Romero from El Salvador, my home country, the church needs to be la voz de los sin voz, the voice of the voiceless. Or as the Bible itself says, speak up for those who cannot speak for themselves, for the rights of all who are destitute. Speak up and defend the rights of the poor and the needy. Proverbs 31:8-9. So the church needs not only to speak the other language, but also, when necessary, to speak for them. This can sometimes get us into troubles, really troubles. As recently happened to a Pentecostal pastor in a rural area of El Salvador. Pastor Jose Angel Perez, who is also the president of El Bosque Cooperative, was accompanying 300 families who were ordered to be evicted from their homes on May 2022. Pastor Perez and other members of the cooperative were arrested while demonstrating in front of the Las Piletas shopping center and the Los Sueños residential area where President Nayib Bukele resides. They were demanding the president's intervention to prevent the eviction of these 300 families. They're going to lose not only their homes, but their job, because they work the land. The president's response so far has been to suppress the demonstration, arrest the pastor, who is still in prison, by the way, and while putting the eviction of the 300 families on hold, he says he will impose a tax of 30% on NGOs that are trying to help this community. Pastor Perez is not a criminal. He simply is paying the price for standing up and speaking for his own community. In a nutshell, for being la voz de los sin voz. I want to finish with how we recover this church as a community of dialogue. How we recover then this characteristic of being a community of dialogue. As a partial answer, I want to finish by offering a brief inspiration from Don Quixote. I don't know how many of you have read this masterpiece of Spanish literature by Miguel de Cervantes Saavedra, Don Quixote de la Mancha. Writer Fernando Vallejo once said the following about Don Quixote, and I quote him, Don Quixote is a long dialogue between Don Quixote and Sancho. with occasional participation from many other interlocutors, and with Cervantes serving as a scribe, taking notes and explaining as they discuss and engage in constant dialogue. And suddenly, while in these talks, people appear along the road and Don Quixote blocks their path. The action scenes of Don Quixote, like Don Quixote attacking the windmills, for instance, take about just 20 pages. And the book has 1,000. Of those 1,000 pages, another 200 are taken up by the novels folded into the larger work. And what is the rest of the work? They are conversations, dialogues. And here is the reason for Sancho Panza's existence and the explanation for the first of Don Quixote's 3 departures, which was a false start. Don Quixote lives alone, and about 20 pages later, Cervantes has him return. What for? For money, some clean shirts, and a squire that he forgot, according to him? No. What he forgot was something more than the money, the shirts, and the squire. He forgot the interlocutor. And without the interlocutor, there is no Quixote. In the same way today, I want to suggest that we have forgotten the interlocutor. The other who thinks differently than we do, but that is so necessary for us to understand ourselves. It is time to realize that just as there is no Quixote without an interlocutor, there is also no true church nor humanity if we do not engage in a genuine dialogue with the other. We need the other like Don Quixote needed Sancho. As literary critic Harold Bloom has noted, the Don and Sancho have many falling outs, but always reconcile and never fail one another in love, loyalty, and in Don's great own wisdom and Sancho's admirable wisdom. Even when they argue most fiercely, their courtesy is unfailing, and they never stop learning from listening one another. And by listening, they change. Indeed, listening changes us. And true dialogue in a world so divided begins with listening to the other, especially those who has been marginalized. Hopefully we are crazy and brave enough, like Don Quixote, to once again be that community of dialogue called the church. God bless you.